Darling, I got to tell you something. And I don't say this to everybody. You look marvelous. Absolutely marvelous.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And Ken, you do look marvelous.
But do I look like Paul Ryan's budget plan?
No, you look marvelous. You don't look like the sixth son of Mitt Romney.
The sixth son?
Well, or whatever number son he would be if he were one more Romney son. People thought they looked a little bit like father and son on stage this week together.
The seventh son was Alpha Centauri.
That is correct.
Yes.
All right. You.
Do I win the Constellation Prize?
So if we look back over this week, I think we have to join the chorus and say, this is it. It's really over.
And Rick Santorum is going to win Wisconsin.
We have to say
you
that.
You were saying that for quite a while.
He was ahead for a long time. And the truth is, it was closer than most people thought it was going to be, maybe partly because some Democrats and independents, of course, Wisconsin doesn't have party registration. So there were some people who told exit pollsters they were Democrats and independents who came out and voted for Santorum. That may have had some effect on the polls. It may have had some effect on people's predictions. I thought for a long time that this was the last chance, or a good chance, for Rick Santorum to win an upper Midwestern state that had a primary and that had, you know, the kind of demographics that would be a little bit more impressive than winning Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Having lost all three, Maryland, D.C., which was expected, and Wisconsin, is the race, Ron Elving, for the Republican presidential nomination over?
I believe it is. I believe, in fact, I'm going to go out on another limb here and say that before we do another podcast, Rick Santorum will have officially ended his campaign.
Wow.
I believe he will do it on Monday, the day after Easter,
wow,
April 9th, or at the latest, perhaps April 10th on Tuesday. And here's why. He has taken his campaign down for a five-day period, which is, of course, about Easter and Holy Week, but is also about regrouping after what has to be a bitter and disappointing trifecta. And we also know that a number of people in Pennsylvania who have been his supporters in the past have begun to say things like, Rick's a practical guy. Rick will kind of smell the coffee. There are polls out. One PPP poll that's out.
Come on, be an adult, Ron.
And they're called the Public Policy Polling Company or something like that. Just as we do this podcast, is showing Mitt Romney taking a 5-point lead in Pennsylvania. Everybody agrees Rick Santorum clearly wants to win his home state before he gets out of the race, but he also doesn't want to lose his home state before he drops out. So I just feel it all coming together toward a rational, well-negotiated, well-presented, sensible, and dignified exit from the campaign April 9th or 10th.
I'd like to make a prediction as well. I'd like to predict that as of last Tuesday, Barack Obama will be the Democratic nominee. Do you know he officially went over the top? He officially clinched the Democratic presidential nomination, Barack Obama winning Maryland, D.C., and Wisconsin.
No kidding. Well, you heard it here first.
That's right. But that's really bold of you, because usually the podcasts have been pretty lame. And we know, I mean, what did we predict? I think the last thing we predicted was the general election would be November 6th. I mean, that was gutsy. But that is
gutsy. I don't think it was this year.
But that is gutsy on your part, because he keeps saying, you know, I'm going, you know.
He wants to make Romney get all 1,144 delegates he needs to be nominated. But look, the math is pretty simple. Whether you look at a hard count, which has Romney somewhere in the 500s, or you look at a more projected count with more prediction of where certain delegates are going to go.
Well, likely caucus voters, right?
That's right, which gives him 100 or so more delegates. The point is he has more than 2.5 times as many as Santorum, and Santorum would have to win 75% of all remaining delegates, a mathematical implausibility, to put it mildly. I mean, just on the structure of the thing. So it's really not there for Rick. His other possibility was if he, combined with Gingrich and Paul, could win enough delegates that they could keep Romney south of 50%, then they would have at least the claim that it should be an open
convention. Yeah, but that was a January theory that seemed to fade quickly in February and certainly March and April. It's not here anymore. But I think the thing that we certainly learned about this week is not only is, for all intents and purposes, the Republican battle over, but I think the Obama campaign is ready finally to mention the R word, the Romney word, because even for the longest time, the DNC has been sending out daily anti-Romney missives. The president, while talking about the Republican do-nothing Congress, he never said the Romney word, and he did this week in his speech to the AP.
This isn't a budget supported by some small rump group in the Republican Party. This is now the party's governing platform. This is what they're running on. One of my potential opponents, Governor Romney, has said that he hoped a similar version of this plan from last year would be introduced as a bill on day one of his presidency. He said that he's very supportive of this new budget. And he even called it marvelous, which is a word you don't often hear when it comes to describing a budget. It's a word you don't often hear generally.
All right, let's say, first of all, the American Society of News Editors is not an easy room to work. They don't generally laugh too much. They don't laugh, certainly, at this kind of a speech, and they didn't laugh too much when Mitt Romney spoke there the next day.
I don't think they've ever laughed at this podcast.
Well, and certainly that's marvelous. But what was the president trying to say when he says you don't hear a word like that applying to a budget? I get that joke. That was the bigger laugh. Then he says it's a word you don't hear often generally. Is he trying to imply that Mitt Romney is a person who uses words most people don't use because he's some kind of Harvard elitist?
Maybe he's a severe conservative.
maybe he's a person who, you know, sort of lifts his pinky while he's drinking from his teacup.
I lift my pinky when I drink from a teacup. I do.
And how does Pinky feel about that?
Look, obviously, forget about the word marvelous for a second. And forget about that we've seen in the past that Mitt Romney does have an interesting, marvelous way of using the English language, as I do, as we saw with being a severe conservative.
You exactly. Know,
severely conservative. But at the same time, this is what President Obama wanted. He wants the opportunity to link what Democrats feel is a draconian budget cuts suggested by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan
and passed by the Republican majority,
House, right?
Yeah, with no Democratic votes.
And the fact that he has wholeheartedly endorsed Mitt Romney and helped him win Wisconsin. And so just as Bill Clinton was very happy to run against the Dole Gingrich ticket, President Obama is very happy to run against the Romney-Ryan ticket, except for the difference is Romney seems to welcome the challenge because he feels that, unlike the president, there is courage coming out of the House Budget Committee, whereas the president is just reacting and attacking and not offering solutions to this big budget deficit.
That's right. The president did attack the Paul Ryan budget by saying it would lower taxes for higher income individuals.
Social Darwinism.
It would lower taxes for corporations, and it would try to then broaden the tax base by eliminating some tax loopholes, which the president noted had not been specified. So we have to sort of assume that it's going to be things like the charity deduction or the mortgage interest deduction, because nothing else would be big enough to pay for those other tax cuts or to defray the cost of those other tax cuts. So he's calling that, let us say, hidden agenda on the Republicans' part. They aren't specifying what they would do to raise revenues from some other groups of people besides the wealthy and corporations.
And we also saw the president this week unveil or re-unveil his energy policy. And while he's talking about conservation and fossil fuels and things like that, Republicans are saying, look, this is just a distraction from the fact that gasoline is surpassing $4 a gallon, approaching $5 a gallon, perhaps. You know, I mean, Rick Santorum could have all the illusions he wants about what may happen in Tampa, but the fact is the Romney-Obama general election has begun in earnest this week, and it's certainly going to be based on the economy.
Extraordinary confluence of circumstances, really, between this result that we got, Wisconsin, Maryland, D.C., the running away in the delegate count, Santorum's problems with just keeping his campaign going in a fiscal sense, and then this moment with this particular meeting in Washington where you could have the president and his clear Republican challenger now, Mitt Romney, give back-to-back speeches in 2 days. It just, it had everything about it but the toss of a coin and an opening gun.
Nancy Pelosi famously said that we would have to pass Obamacare to find out what was in it. President Obama has turned that advice into a campaign strategy. He wants us to reelect him so we can find out what he'll actually do. With all the challenges the nation faces, this is not the time for President Obama's hide-and-seek campaign. President Obama has said he wants to transform America. I don't want to transform America. I want to restore to America the values of economic freedom and opportunity and small government that have made this nation the leader it is.
And, you know, it's funny. It feels like we were talking about this before, but it feels like this battle for the Republican nomination has been going on such a long time.
Over a year.
Well, but the thing is, it's still the end of March, beginning of April. I mean, maybe it's long for a Republican battle because John McCain won it early in March and previously because of all these winner-take-all primaries, because of anointed frontrunners, the nomination seems to be over fairly quickly. Bush, Dole, McCain, just pretty quickly, whereas this one lasted far longer than anybody thought. But it looks like, I mean, again, Newt Gingrich could talk about going all the way to Tampa, Santorum does his thing, and Ron Paul is hanging around. But the general election has begun, and the White House has finally acknowledged what the DNC has been saying all along, that the target is Mitt Romney.
Okay, so we saw Romney on stage this week with Paul Ryan. We saw him embrace the Paul Ryan budget. How about Paul Ryan for vice president?
Well, you know, we're going to have obviously a lot of time to discuss the Veep sweepstakes, and considering the fact that probably the interest in the Republican nomination will be gone if it even lasts until April 24th. So we'll have time to weigh and reject some of the names that are on the short list. But Paul Ryan is an interesting choice. I don't know if he helped Romney win Wisconsin. But,
oh, I think he did.
But there's a certain comfort factor that's there. Not only did he endorse him, he campaigned with him at least five stops throughout Wisconsin.
It was big.
Yeah, it was big. And, you know, it's not that members of Congress are big news in Wisconsin, because if you think of all the governors and senators of Wisconsin the last 50 years, nobody was a sitting House member when they were elected. Nobody. And in many ways, he's fulfilling the role that the late Jack Kemp held for the Republican Party in the late 1970s, early 1980s with supply-side economics.
The Jack Kemp comparison has been made elsewhere, and it's an excellent comparison, I think, because there is a kind of spirit about Jack Kemp in which he could be extraordinarily conservative, Ronald Reagan conservative, and more so, pushing Reagan to be more fiscally libertarian almost, and to really go after tax rates and to dial back on all kinds of government commitment on the one hand, but Jack Kemp always had this upbeat personality, very inclusive right. kind of approach to politics, and had a persona that people related to, a kind of inspiring presence. And I believe Paul Ryan has some of that charisma. We saw him give the response a while back to one of Barack Obama's State of the Union speeches, and he did a pretty good job at that. It's a tough assignment. And he has, on occasion, taken on the president, I think, rather effectively as a speaker. But what does he do for you as part of your ticket? Does he bring back the women who are going away from Republicans at this moment? Does he bring back Hispanics that went two-thirds Democratic in 2008? Does he even get you the state of Wisconsin, which went for Obama in 2008? What would he really add to the electoral math?
Well, the only thing, I don't know about the electoral math, I do know that unlike Dole and Kemp in 1996, which was basically a shotgun marriage, the two guys never even liked each other, there is a comfort factor that you see with Romney and Ryan that you didn't see with Kerry and Edwards, for example. So, I mean, there's a history of presidential nominees picking somebody on the ticket that would either win you a state, like when George Bush picked Dick Cheney, that really helped with Wyoming.
Yes, I think it really nailed Wyoming.
That was really big, as somebody should. But the reason I don't think it's Ryan, first of all, I mean, for all of President Obama's attacks on Paul Ryan and the radical social Darwinism budget, I don't think the American people know who Paul Ryan is.
Or what his budget does.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think it gets the activists excited, but I don't think it moves anything. John Sununu, a former governor of New Hampshire and a close Romney advisor, said the other day that Romney should pick a safe choice for running mate.
Rob Portman.
Well, yeah, or
Ohio.
Tim Pawlenty. But no, look, given the fact that Romney still shows continuing weakness with the very far conservative base of the Republican Party, although exit polls did show that he is picking up more and more Tea Party.
A little bit better in Wisconsin.
Yeah. But so you think he's going to have to pick up somebody really who, the real true conservatives, the vocal conservatives, somebody who will just make them happy and feel it's not just a status quo establishment choice.
Is that what he has to do in August, or is that what he has to do now in April? He wants to heal the wounds. He wants to ease Rick Santorum out. He wants to reassure all these people that he's okay, but when we get to August, he's going to be thinking November. And so he's going to go to Marco Rubio, and he's going to say, I need Florida. I need to show a better face to Hispanics. And I need someone younger. And that's all there. It's a package, Marco Rubio. Thank you very much.
I don't, right now, I'm probably leaning more towards a Bob McDonnell type than a Marco Rubio. I think, look, I think it's too
Bob
early.
McDonnell, the governor of Virginia.
Virginia, who also got bad press with his
contraception.
Yeah, the intrusive
ultrasound. Yes. Not to mention the fact he's only been governor for like a year and a half.
Well, Barack Obama was a senator for a year and a half, too, when he was president. But the point is that, you know, Democrats, starting with Walter Mondale and Geraldine Ferraro, they've named their running mates in advance of the convention since 84. And Republicans have been doing that since 96, I guess, with Dole and Kemp. So I kind of think you're going to make the choice early, but you're not going to do it in April, May, June. Otherwise, there's nothing to say when you meet in Tampa.
The guy who's got the toughest job in the Republican Party right now, and that's not to say it's necessarily a male, is the person who's been sent out to do the vetting and scrubbing on the vice presidential possibilities, which, of course, as we now know, was not done very thoroughly or very reliably with respect to Sarah Palin in 2008. They're going to want to do that better this time. So if you've got, for example, Susana Martinez, first-term governor of New Mexico, she is Hispanic, she is a woman, she is a Republican. She would
Swing
be
state.
A possibility.
Swing state.
She would do a lot for you with those demographics. But they're going to want to know a lot more about her than they knew about Sarah Palin.
Well, I would go to Sarah Palin because we heard Sarah Palin on the Hannity show this week. First of all, she was also on the Today show.
She was in many places.
Well, she was interesting. The fun part
I'm
was,
beginning to think she's looking for a higher media profile.
Well, she's going rogue.
She's going Carl rogue.
I think Sarah Palin is all over the map. I did like the fact that when she showed up on the set of the Today Show, she was surrounded by newspapers. That's the Katie Couric joke.
Looking kind of exasperated, like, how do you keep up with them all?
I have so many newspapers to read. But she did say on Hannity that the party should go rogue, and she suggested Congressman Alan West of Florida as a running mate. And, you know,
I think that qualifies as rogue.
Yeah, no, I think that qualifies as immediately disregard. This is coming from somebody who herself was not completely vetted, shall we say, in 2008. But it is interesting where you're going to hear these names coming out from all different segments of the party.
Well, the problem with Sarah Palin was what we didn't know about her. The problem with some of these people who are being mentioned is what we do already know about them. Alan West is a controversy factory, and he's struggling just to win his House seat again in Florida this year after one term in the House. So, you know, what are we trying to say? I think she's trying to say that the party needs more diversity, and that's certainly true. She's trying to say we need to liven things up and we need to find somebody from Florida. And those are defensible elements in the decision for who you choose for your ticket.
Yeah, in the sense that she's always talked about wanting somebody like a Gingrich or a Santorum to win the nomination just so the party goes on and on and on, which does not necessarily mean it's good news for the party, but she just wanted a good vetting of the process.
And you mean so that the nomination contest goes on and on, not the party.
Right. Ultimately, the lessons learned by picking of Spiro Agnew, by Geraldine Ferraro, by Sarah Palin for vice president, while exciting at some points, turned out to be difficult and disastrous at other points. And I think Romney's staff, Romney's organization, is sharp enough to realize they cannot make that same mistake again.
I agree. John Sununu is probably right, saying go with somebody safe. Rob Portman, the senator from Ohio, is a little anodyne, but at the same time, he might very well help you get Ohio, and he's not going to cost you anything.
Or bring you anything.
Well, and I would argue that what we see now in the larger indicators, what we're seeing in the polls, is a real warning signal to the Republicans that they can't just stand pat. They can't just say, we'll play the cards that we've already got. They need to reach out for something. They need to trade in some of their safety that they've got in this Mitt Romney nominee for some kind of risk, because Gallup is saying Obama's ahead by 10 points in 12 swing states. That begins to look like a real lead.
His polling with women is overwhelming. Romney has lost. The more the Republican contest has gone on, the more that contraception and issues like that became part of the process, the more and more women polling shows have moved away from the Republican Party. So
which
that's
is,
another consideration.
Absolutely, and that's the more serious one. I can see the swing state poll coming back. I can see them being, after all, swing states. I could see that evaporating in a couple, 3 weeks. The problem with women is more serious. And I think that's why Romney has immediately been out there talking about Ann Romney, his wife, how much he really likes having her with him on the campaign trail, what a leader she is. And she has become a much more high-profile, high-visibility part of his campaign.
Yeah, I happen to think that she's great. I watch her. I mean, I didn't see her this week. I think it was Paul Ryan who did the Ann Romney role in introducing the candidate in Wisconsin. But in primary and primary after primary victory, it was Ann Romney who warmed up the crowd. She's very unassuming, quite funny, and very politically smart. And, you know, we talked about some previous Republican wives who may be kind of like Stepford wives or robots, but Ann Romney is definitely not one of those women.
In other news, we had the president commenting on the Supreme Court and the questions that the Supreme Court apparently had about his health care law, and saying he was confident that they were going to uphold it because he said it's constitutional. End of story. And then he also said that it would be unprecedented for them to overturn something that had been made into law by an overwhelming majority of Congress. That really did not sit very well with a lot of conservatives and did not sit very well with a lot of people on the federal bench who think it's their job to decide.
And it's
exactly.
So, and it's so funny to hear a Democrat talking about overturning of a Supreme Court decision when we've seen for years Republicans starting with impeaching Earl Warren.
Decades.
Impeaching William O. Douglas, talking about the activist judges that Nixon and Bush and Reagan talked about.
Many of them were unelected.
They were president of the United States.
No, I mean the judges they were talking about. They talked a lot about unelected judges. It was almost a perfect adopting of the language that we heard over 50 years from conservatives, including conservative presidents.
And speaking of unelected, a lot of this Democratic anger towards the court did start with the unelected, so-called unelected George W. Bush winning in Bush v. Gore.
Five to four.
Well, actually...
No, it was an overwhelming 5-4
vote. No, it was the black vote that helped George W. Bush.
Clarence Thomas.
Yes. Exactly. So you have that, and then you also have the Citizens United case in 2010 when Obama...
You know, there's so much division in our country. Shouldn't we be happy there are some citizens who are united?
I don't mind the division, but it's the multiplication I always had trouble with.
I had been told there would be
no
math.
You're right. But speaking of math, this doesn't add up at all. Tim Johnson, a Republican congressman from Illinois, 15th district, I think.
That's right, six-termer.
And I think, if memory serves, he endorsed Ron Paul for president. Not that it matters, but
he's an unusual guy. Tim Johnson is kind of a man who sets his own course in the House.
He had a tough primary. He won the primary for another term in a tougher district than he's been used to getting. But again, he was favored.
The Democrats drew him a bad district trying to get rid of him.
And then somehow this week he announced out of nowhere that, you know, I'm retiring.
I'm walking away. Yeah. I don't need this anymore.
You're talking about the podcast, right?
Always talking about the podcast. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Podcast.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
You're much, you're too much, and just too very, very to ever be, to ever be in Webster's Dictionary. And so I'm borrowing a love song from the birds to tell you that you're marvelous. Tell you that you're marvelous.
Tell you that you're marvelous. For words.